Good morning, everyone. Welcome here to Toronto United Mennonite Church on a slightly gloomy Sunday morning. We need the rain, which is just fine. If there's anybody out there still, come on in here. We'll get together for our service this morning. Let's start off with a couple of songs. Let's start off with number 36, Let Us Build a House. We have a theme these days of the peace table. So everything revolves today around this table that has bread on it and a number of other ideas around the table of peace. If you'd like to stand, please do so. You can feel free to stay seated if you like to as well.
Beautiful.
And let's stay standing if you like. And song number 747. You obviously have the option to look in your hymn books if you like, or you can look up top here. And with my eyesight starting to go the way of old age, I'm using the screen in front of me, which helps a great deal. Singing for a small group. Please be seated.
And I invite you to join me in the call to worship. It will be on the screen in a second. And we'll all read together as we're all calling God, our attention to God already with us. This day, God, may we dream your dreams. This day, God, may we reflect your love. This day, God, may we do your work. This day, God, may we taste your peace. Amen. My name is Jan Kraus, and along with many, many others providing leadership, support, and behind-the-scenes resources today, we welcome you to TUMCE, Toronto United Mennonite Church. We are a Christian community in the Mennonite Anabaptist Peace Church tradition. We aspire to be a family of faith that welcomes people with diverse backgrounds and stories, diverse worshiping patterns, and we want to support each other while following Christ's example in working for peace and justice in our urban context. Our theme this summer is Gather Around the Peace Table. And we're aware that gathering to eat can also lead to tension and uncertainty. How do we welcome everyone? Will everyone enjoy what we've provided to eat? Will I enjoy what the host has provided to eat? Do I have to swallow politely? Are there allergies or special food needs that we all need to consider? Tastes differ, and so do table manners. Whether guest or host, sharing a meal can be stressful. This summer, we're exploring many different ways of gathering around the peace table. We welcome differing ways of being together as we share both physical and spiritual food. A banquet table where all are welcome is one of the most potent symbols of God's beloved community. Today, you are warmly invited to gather around the peace table, and I invite you to be the guest today. Savor your favorite foods and traditions from the service and from the table. Perhaps you want to try something new. As my grandmother used to say, well, try at least 3 bites before you get up from the table. You may discover you like it, and if you don't, leave it. It's not for you. So again, welcome to everyone who is here on the ground and in the cloud. At this point, I'm going to ask Jason to put everybody who's in the cloud up on the screen. So tidy your hair right quick. He's not going to put you individually. It's going to be the grid. And I invite those of you on the screen to wave to us. And now, will the rest of the people who are on the ground stand up, turn toward Jason in the back, and wave to our friends on the screen? Thank you, everyone. And I just want to point out Trish on the screen. She's going to host after the service. So for those of you who are in the cloud, there'll be a hostess for your gathering and sharing afterwards. Do we have visitors here today? I know of at least one. Tim is going to introduce a couple of our visitors. So wait till you get a mic. Here it comes.
Good morning. Jackie and I are delighted to have our dear friends Betty Casas and Ari Fernandez here from Matanzas, Cuba. Some of you may remember them from the 7 years they lived in Toronto while they each did their doctorates at Toronto School of Theology. It's been, 10 years that you returned to Cuba, or 8 years, or whatever, something like that. They are Presbyterian church leaders, pastors, and Adi is also the president of the Ecumenical Seminary. And he will be sharing in the service later a bit of, in a kingdom report, a bit of the context of the church in Cuba at this time. So they're here with us for a couple of weeks, but it's great to have them here at TUMSE.
Thank you, Tim. Welcome. Do we have other visitors or people who are back that have been away a long time and want to stand up and say hi? Do we have any visitors in the cloud today? No visitors in the cloud. Thank you. It's great to have everyone here today, whether this is your first time, a returning time, obviously, or you've been here multiple times. I have an announcement to make. We'll have announcements on the screen in just a moment, too. Nobody approached me about announcements, so okay, I've got at least one back here. While Doreen is coming up, I want to announce that this is a very, very busy church, 24, well, maybe not 24/7, but And with apologies, what to alert you that the accessible washroom is being very temperamental these days. So if you need accessible facilities, feel free to use the elevator, and it is accessible downstairs.
So it's time again for another issue of Place of Meeting Quarterly. We've got a little bit of time, but wanted to announce our theme so you can be thinking about it. It's a very appropriate theme, I think, for today, because it's called Beyond Borders. International relations have been much on our minds lately, particularly with regard to the U.S., where quite a good number of Tumseers hail from or have spent a fair amount of time. I know there's quite a few American-born people among us. And many of us have other vocational or church connections or family or friends who live in the United States. Some of us are engaged or at least interested in what groups like Mennonite Action are doing to bring a different voice into protests there, often with nonviolent singing demonstrations. And some of us have significant ties to other countries that experience political upheaval, unrest, and conflict. So this brings up often uncomfortable questions that I'm not sure we discuss a lot in our church. How do patriotism, national identity, and political action conflict or jibe with our convictions as Mennonites? As someone born or deeply connected with another country, how do you navigate these questions? What does it mean to be part of God's kingdom without borders, yet be living in a world where lines on a map divide us? I'd love for you to share your thoughts. Even if you just got a paragraph, or if you want to write me 3 pages, that's fine too. I would love to see what you think about this and have a good discussion about that. You can send your submissions to Tumsey Place of Meeting, all one word, at gmail.com, and I'll continue to publish announcements about that so you get a reminder. And I'd like submissions by September 21st. So you've got a month. Thanks.
And now, moving on to our land acknowledgement. Please take a look at this piece of art, this artwork. What do you see? What captures your attention first? What does this remind you of? How do you feel as you look at this slide and ponder the quote, "A land acknowledgement is a seed of truth," by Mo Thunder, the artist? This is a artwork that Mo Thunder provided for the university that she works in, college, I guess it is. And the artist notes on her webpage, "Inspiration comes from everywhere. It's stories, memory, and intergenerational healing, individually and collectively." She continues, "This painting is birthed from a memory of cultivating a garden on the land with my family." She entreats us to live from the heart with a good mind. Walk on the land with love and respect alongside all nations, relations, and kin. Harvest only what you need. With all these seeds planted, we give thanks every morning before anything else, acknowledging all of creation that surrounds us and is within us. It cannot be ignored, as it truly sustains us. A land acknowledgement is a seed of truth.
In your songbooks or up on the screen, number 563, our opening hymn, Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing. If you're so inclined, please stand and join us.
And now I invite Ari Fernandez to come forward and share the Kingdom Report with us.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the introduction and thank you for the invitation to be here with you. It's always a pleasure and honor to be with you, and especially with our good friends Tim and Jackie. The invitation to share very briefly about the situation in Cuba right now. Maybe some of you know what is happening. And also the situation of the church, how the church is responded to that situation, and also theological education institutions. In few words, I would say that in Cuba we are living the worst crisis since 1959, since the triumph of the revolution. It's a very, very critical situation in terms of socioeconomic terms, but also political terms. We are suffering since the last 4 or 5 years, but especially, particularly since the last 6 months, after February, after the military operation of the U.S. government in Venezuela to take President Maduro off the equation there. We have been suffering also a fuel blockade, which is affecting all dimensions of everyday life in Cuba. We are suffering the highest inflation in history, I would say, the highest level of scarcity of food, of goods, of fuel, of energy, of water, supplies, and the highest level of poverty. I would say that probably more than 17% of the Cuban population is living in poverty today. Just to have a concrete idea, the price of a box of 30 eggs of a liter of cooking oil is right now 6,000 Cuban pesos. The pension of a retired person, average, is 3,000 Cuban pesos. So you need 2 months to buy a liter of cooking oil or 30x. That's an example of the situation we are living in. Of course, this crisis is a multi-factor crisis. There are external factors and also internal factors. It also had to do with the incompetence of our government, which has lost, I would say, their credibility among people, among the population in many ways. Many of the economic, socioeconomic measures and reforms that have been taking place in the last 4 or 5 years have been damaging the daily life of the Cuban population. In the midst of all of that, well, I forgot to mention the highest migration we have experienced. In the last 5 years, we have lost more than 1 million people. Most of them have gone to the U.S., have migrated to the U.S., mostly young people, young families. So we have lost the workforce of the country. Many professionals, technicians, they have left the country. So we are in a very, very hopeless situation. That's why many people leave the country. In the midst of that, churches try to do their best to accompany, to serve, to protect those in need, which is a big part of the population, but particularly kids, I mean children and seniors, with very, very low resources, very few resources. Churches try to feed the seniors with breakfast or lunch, or to wash their clothes, or to provide some kind of care for them, including children. It's very difficult because we don't have the resources to do that. So we depend on the love and the contribution of some partner sister churches and ecumenical organizations around the world, especially particularly US, Canada, and Europe. So thanks to their generosity, we can do our job as churches. And also as a theological institution, we try to provide the best formation we can to train pastors and leaders, and also to diversify our education in order to feed or to provide resources and tools to develop different kind of ministries at churches, because the needs are various in these times. It's not only to train pastors, but also to take care of different kind of sectors of population, etc., with different needs and different problematic situations. So we always say to our visitors, and this year has been very bad in that sense, because we haven't received many visitors this year because of the situation, particularly from people from Canada or the U.S. But we also say to them, well, we are very thankful for all your help, for all your contribution, for your prayers, and particularly for your visits. When you come to us to visit with us, it's a powerful message you are bringing with you. And the message is that we are not alone. We haven't been forgotten by God and for you, by you. So I encourage you to continue to pray for the Cuban people, for the situation. We don't have a clue what is going to happen. But we are convinced, in the midst of the hopelessness we are living, we have the hope that God has a plan for our country, for our people, and that plan is for our well-being. So I encourage you to keep praying for us and for the people of Cuba, for the church in Cuba, and also for the theological educational institution as our seminary in Matanzas. Thank you very much. If some of you have questions after the service, I am available. We'll be very happy to talk to you. Thank you.
How do you respond to that except with a psalm? In rhetorical parlance, there's a frame that you ignore everything before a but. Everything before a but is untrue. And so I love that this starts with but. Your loyal love, Lord, extends to the skies. Your faithfulness reaches to the clouds. Your righteousness is as strong as the mountains, and your justice like the deepest seas. Lord, you save both humans and animals. Your faithful love is priceless, God. Humanity finds shelter in the shadow of your wings. They feast upon the abundance of your house. You let them drink from the river of pure joy. Within you is the spring of life. In your light, we see light.
Giving with gratitude. This is a time that we focus on our giving. And for me, giving with gratitude means it's a response. I'm responding to everything for which I'm grateful. Everything that God has given me, food, light, life. And because I'm one of those people who has the automatic deposit, I often don't even think about it. It's just, you know, like paying the rent. It goes out of my bank account. But today, I want us just to pause for a while and think about our giving as gratitude to God, to our community, to all the gifts that we receive. And also to think about how do we respond to those gifts with money, with time, with our prayers. There's so many different ways we can respond. And Dennis is going to teach us a new table grace as one of the ways that we express our gratitude for all that we've received and for our ability to give.
So this is a little table grace I put together and borrowed from a little bit of other poetry elsewhere and included my own works. Oops, I forgot to take out Father in this slide. It's become Maker in the song itself. So day by day, your cherished children from your hand are kindly fed. Maker, now we thank you dearly for our humble daily bread. Table graces are often quite simple, certainly the ones I learned in Low German at home were simple little things, and they were ingrained deeply into us. So let's sing this one now. If I can have the next slide. Can you just play the tune through once for us?
I'm going to invite the children to come forward. Sorry, there is a hymn first.
All right, for this one, everybody has to stand up, shake out your hands, loosen up a little bit, because this is a spiritual that needs a little bit of a swing. All right, let's go.
I do invite all the children to come forward. Join me at the table. Yeah, pick a seat. All right. I am going to read a poem first. Absolutely. Come on up. We got a chair right here. Right here. Everyone can take a slice of bread if they wish. Now, this is gluten-free in the middle here. We have some buns. We have some bread here. We have some tortilla here. Everyone can take one piece. I'm going to ask you to not eat it yet, but you can grab one. And Sebastian, I'm wondering if you want to take, as I'm reading the poem, see if anyone else, any of the grown-ups would like a piece. Why don't you take it around? Do you want one? You can grab one first. Okay, this one. And Maggie, can you take this around, maybe, and this to see? Great. Okay, we're going to first read a poem, and then we're going to talk about the bread, okay? The poem goes like this. Be gentle when you touch bread. Let it not lie uncared for, unwanted. So often bread is taken for granted. There's so much beauty in bread. Beauty of sun and soil, beauty of patient toil. Winds and rain have caressed it. Christ often blessed it. Be gentle when you touch bread. All right. Does everyone have a piece? Thank you, Maggie. Would any grown-up like a piece that didn't get offered one? All right. We have tortilla here. We do have some more bun here as well. Oh, okay. All right. Now I'm going to ask that you take what you have and break it in half. Break it in half. Did you get a piece of bread? Do you want a piece of bread? No. One piece of bread. No. Okay, you break it in half. Okay, you can eat one piece, but not the second while I talk, okay? You can eat the first piece. Now, before we eat the second piece, I want you to look at it really carefully. What color is it? Is it the same throughout? Is there texture? Is there a crust? And now I'm going to invite you to close your eyes. And we're going to think about how this piece of bread got all the way here. I think of a seed, tiny, selected by specialists from among many, planted by a farmer on a cool spring morning, planted in the rich, dark soil, exactly the right depth, and then gently covered up. And the combination of warmth and water that caused that seed to burst open with a tiny shoot that struggles, pushing the dirt aside to try and make it up to the surface and find the sun. And as the roots start to draw nutrients from the earth, I like to imagine a little worm digs a path beside it. And the green stalk pushes higher, stubble on the field, and it feels the wind blow through it like leaves. And the rain beats down on it until it bends and stands in the nighttime, seeing all the stars with no city lights, only to have the sun ride on it day after day, and over the course of months, dry it out, turning it golden yellow. And through it all, the labor of the farmer is there as they check and care for the soil to make sure the nutrients are just right for it to grow tall and strong. And then when it's time and the head of grain is heavy and the conditions are dry and perfect, a large combine comes and harvests it. And this takes long hours of work from the farmer. It cuts the stalk and threshes the kernels off the woody bit and blows away the chaff And the grain goes into a big truck to a mill where it's crushed and sifted into soft flour. It is cleaned and put into bags and sold to people and places to use. I like to imagine someone using a favorite recipe, perhaps from a cookbook that reminds them of their grandparents with stained pages. Maybe as a recipe they know by heart, they take the flour and rejoin it with water, which must feel nice, and yeast and a little salt, and the baker's hands get in there and knead the dough, pushing, folding the sticky substance, helping bind it together, and then they wait a while for the yeast to make gas bubbles and the dough puffs up, a chemical reaction. And while they wait, maybe the baker thinks of the special occasion or the special person that will share it with them. And after it has risen, it is put into a bread pan, perhaps one that has been used dozens of times, each time getting a little better, and in the heat of the oven, something extraordinary happens. No changes. It rises, it firms, browns, and becomes the loaf we recognize. The sugars on the surface crystallize, creating a golden brown color in the crust. And when it is time, it is removed and given some time to cool, filling the room with a delicious smell. And we can enjoy it, perhaps with a touch of jam, or as a sandwich, or all on its own. What a journey from that tiny seed to this beautiful loaf on our table. And you can open your eyes and notice that what you are holding, you're holding the end of that journey in your hand. And we are not separate from this journey, we are participating in it. My body is now becoming part of that story. The sunlight that became grain becomes nourishment in you. The soil's nutrients become your cells. The water that passed through the plant becomes part of you. The labor of dozens or hundreds of people eventually becomes energy that allows you to think, laugh, work, love, pray, care for other people. And so we say thank you. We say a little prayer. Thank you, Lord, for this ordinary miracle, for the seed and the soil, the rain and the sun, for the hands that planted and harvested, for the knowledge passed from one generation to another, for the hands that kneaded and waited, for the heat that transformed it, and for the countless things we never saw but which made this bread possible. Help us to notice more often how much we receive without noticing. And now you can eat your second half, and you can receive it. And maybe it's just me, but I think the second piece tastes better. Okay, you can go back to your grown-ups.
If you can consider singing while your mouths are still full, well, you're quite talented. Let's sing just the first verse of Jesus, Lover of My Soul. Let's stand.
Thank you. Reading from Revelation chapter 3, verse 20. Look, I'm standing at the door and knocking. If any hear my voice and open the door, I will come in to be with them and will have dinner with them, and they will have dinner with me.
Once upon a time, I overheard someone say that cooking or baking could be a spiritual practice. Thank you. At the moment, that statement didn't resonate with me. I asked myself how that could be, because for me, at that time, cooking, that was a tedious task. Even when I was a teenager, and a young adult, I wanted nothing to do with cooking. Kitchen work? Nope. Not cooking for me, no way. When my mom, who at the time owned a restaurant, wanted to teach me, I would disappear. When one of my favorite aunts tried to teach me how to cook rice, no matter how many times she showed me, I just didn't get it. I will always burn the rice, and she finally gave up. And now, you who know me and my cooking skills will wonder what changed. Well, I tell you, even though I complete a college culinary program in my early 20s, I must confess that was the last resort. The professional programs I really wanted at that time after I finished high school, were folklore dancing or airline pilot. But these were denied to me because I was too short. So reluctantly, I found myself learning how to prepare gourmet meals as a professional chef, even though I'm not professional. However, despite my lack of interest in cooking at young age, I did learn at home the value of celebrating events where food took center stage. Whether sharing a family meal or participating in lunches in Teusaquillo Mennonite Church in Bogota, I always had the sense that something special was happening when we sat down to eat together. Oh boy, I have this upside down. When I immigrated to Canada 34 years ago, I had no idea that it would be starting a new journey in my understanding of cooking. Tim's family, my Thompson community, and my friends have shown me a whole new dimension of sharing meals around the table. They have taught me that cooking with gusto was not enough. They showed me that the meal itself transformed those who gathered around the table, making it a sacred act of fellowship, warmth, and deep connection. The table became, for me, an intimate sanctuary where we open our hearts and share our lives, embracing joy, holding a space for sadness, and celebrating everything in between. For me, these moments of vulnerable sharing had become spaces of profound learning. I am not only discovering the deep and character of the peoples gathering around me, but I'm also absorbing their life stories and keeping their wisdom close to my heart. This helps shape who I am as an individual, both in my everyday life and in my spiritual journey as a child of God. I have also realized that what is required of me, we gather to share a meal around the table, is the willingness and awareness to keep the door of my heart open. while allowing myself to truly enjoy the life journeys of those with whom I share the meal. Tina and I have sought to experience this dimension of the table with our family, with our friends, and in the Tamsi here and the Tamsi community. We have experienced it at potlucks where all sit together like one big family, at the meals that the New Life Church lovingly prepares for fundraisings, and for me, guess what? Tamsi's most exciting event of the year. Guess who's coming to dinner? Whether neither the host nor the guests know where or with whom they are going to be dining. Whatever the occasion, there are moments when the table becomes a place of welcome and grace-filled connections, of joy and reconciliation, of peace, the peace table. As I journey through these cooking and dining experiences, I have also been learning the value of hosting. I have to come to understand the importance of every detail in creating a meaningful experience. Despite what I learned in culinary school, being a host is not about following a rigid set of rules. It's about making everyone feel welcome, comfortable, and valued. A host's foundational role is to infuse the occasion with hospitality and generosity. And on the flip side, the guests arrive willing to embrace the celebration with joy and enthusiasm. I treasure all these meaningful and deep experiences. However, as I reflect on them, I begin to wonder about spiritual food. The question that comes to mind is, how does our human experience of growing or buying, preparing and cooking, hosting and eating food around the table relate to our spiritual lives? So what comes to mind is Revelation 3:20, where Jesus says, "Look, I'm standing at the door, I'm knocking. If any hear my voice and opens the door, I will come in to be with them, and will have dinner with them, and they will have dinner, dine with me. They will have dinner with me." This verse contains such a powerful image, the knocking, the opening, the door, and the sharing a meal. At the same time, it shows us the profound importance of food, with physical food both physically and spirituality. I would like to explore this verse without going into the history context of this apocalyptic book, as some preachers do. Instead, I want to stay with the image of the invitation itself, the door, the knock, the response, and ultimately the meal. For me, Revelation 3:20 is the consummation of Jesus' invitations, not only to each individual, but also to us as a Tamsi community, to sit at the table and dine with him. As the gospel tells us, Jesus did not only teach, offer forgiveness and redemption in synagogues and along the roads. He did so most significantly at the table as well. The meals Jesus shared were not superficial gatherings, but moments charged with profound theological symbolism, revealing the heart of the kingdom of God, an open, inclusive reign where everyone, has a place. Jesus' fellowship was characterized by inclusivity, not exclusivity. His meals were invitation to grace, not gatherings to reinforce barriers, but rather open spaces of communion. For him, the table is a place of profound encounter. In Revelation 3:20, we read that Jesus is also clear in his invitation. He is not going to impose himself on us and dine with us uninvited. Although Jesus frequently dined with all kinds of people at times and announces his presence, here we see something different, where Jesus stands at the door and knocks. He waits for the door to be opened. I'm standing at the door and knocking. I wonder, what does the door symbolize? I find meaning in the traditional image of the door representing the human heart. And I also wonder, why does Jesus knock before entering a place and announcing who he is? The verse doesn't say what he said. I imagine it was something like, "This is Jesus. I have come to spend more time with you, with this community. Perhaps you could dine, we can dine together." We know that knocking is a polite way to ask for entry, to announce your arrival or get the attention of people inside of a building or a room. It serves as a social signal to show respect for privacy before entering a private space. But we don't usually announce who is knocking. Jesus does. Then, in the second half of the verse, there is a pivotal moment, a call to exercise our agency and answer the knock. "If any hear my voice and open the door." At this juncture, we are each invited to hear Jesus. Jesus' knock and the gentle announcement of his presence. We must then decide whether to unlatch the door of our hearts to welcome Jesus into our most intimate spaces, to have a relationship around the table and have a sacred encounter with him. Or we remain behind the door that is firmly barred. Hans Schaffler, and I like to have them. In the Anabaptist Bible, there is a commentary about Hans Schaffler that he did. Hans Schaffler, a 16th century Anabaptist thinker and leader who was martyred for his faith in 1528, reflected on this passage saying, "I admonish you, indeed, all at those whose heart's door the Lord stands and knocks with longing, to open the door to him and to sup with him. For certainly the great supper is near at hand. So open the door while he stands and knocks, for he might tire and leave. And then when you open, he is not longer there." Schaffler's understanding of Revelation 3:20 was defined by apocalyptic urgency and mysticism. For him, Christ's knocking was not a timeless, open-ended invitation. I am struck by his warning that Christ will not knock forever. He cautioned that if a person hesitates or ignores the call, Christ might get tired and leave. Schaffler's review through faith as an intense internal transformation. To sup with Christ means to experience an inward spiritual communion that alters how a person lives. Shufflers believe that answering Jesus' knocking and opening the door required a willingness to suffer for the truth. The Anabaptists called this willingness to suffer glasenhai, meaning yielding or surrender. Perhaps you remember our Pastor Peter's sermon exploring glasenhai a couple years ago. For Hans Schaffler, glasenhai was not just a passive feeling of peacefulness or calmness as is used today in the modern German. It was a radical, costly, and active submission to God through Christ. As his temporary Anabaptist mystic Hans Denk said, "No one may know Christ truly unless they follow him daily in life." I feel conflicted about Schaffler's perspective of Jesus getting tired of knocking at the door and leaving. But I do agree with him that stop with crisis means to experience an inward communion. I also concur that opening the door to Jesus requires willingness, trust, and commitment to glasenhai, to surrender completely to God, to empty ourselves, and to let Christ rule within us. Returning to today's passage of the book of Revelation, in the last line, Jesus said, "I will come. I will come in to be with them, and I will have dinner with them, and they will have dinner with me." To my heart, this feels like a sacred place. I envision the gathering where Jesus sat to eat, echoing the gospel stories of communion rooted in radical inclusivity. This is not mere private invitation. It is a resonant call reaching out to every person in our community. His table stands as a sanctuary of welcome, providing a holy ground where he desires a deep and transformative encounter with each of us. And this brings me back to the table where we sat with Jesus. How do we dine around the table with the divine? While I have been refining my culinary techniques and discovering the art of hosting, I have also explored spiritual tools that nourish the inner life. Practices like sentry prayer, Lectio Divina, Audio Divina, have become part of my journey. I found myself returning to the simple, profound command of Psalm 46:10, "Be still and know that I am God." I am also drawn to the invitation in Matthew 6:6, where we are encouraged to retreat into our inner room, which I understand as the sanctuary of the heart, to close the door and commune with the Mother Father in secret. These contemplative rhythms cause me to cease my striving, to release my anxieties, and to trust that the Spirit will create a holy atmosphere within me. In that stillness and intentional presence, we foster a sacred intimacy with the divine. By opening the doors of our hearts to eternal love through silence and contemplation, we are truly providing the necessary sustenance for our souls. Jesus asked us to invite him to our table. But we must open the door, surrender ourselves, embrace glasenhai, and welcome him fully into our lives. Jesus also reminds us with his invitations that we are not meant to rely on on our own limited energy, but rather to find our home in Him, staying rooted in His presence and return in. Stay rooted in His presence and return. And in return, He will love us. He nourishes us. He heals us. And He sat with us every day. I would like to invite you to a short meditation. If you feel comfortable, close your eyes and put your hand on your heart. Take a deep breath in. And as you breathe in, noticing any distraction or tension in your body, mind, or spirit. As you breathe out, let all that distraction or tension go. With the next breath in and out, allow your mind, your heart, and spirit to open to what is to come and just listen. Be silent. Be still. Presence. Door. Knock. Listen. Choice. Aloud. Trust. Promise. Empty before you, God. Say nothing. Ask nothing. Be silent. Be still. Sacred. Intimacy. Divine. Let your God look upon you. That is all. God knows. God understands. God loves you with an enormous love and only wants you to look upon you with that love. Quiet. Still. Be. Let Jesus and your God sup with you every day, quiet, still, be, nourish, heal, peace, joy, enjoy. One more time, take a deep breath in, and let it out. Amen.
For our final song this morning, let's stand together and sing Let's Walk Together. In service of the theme, I propose we change the second word of the first verse. Instead of let's walk together, let's eat together. The rest stand.
Oh, God's grace all around.
stay standing.
And please join me in the benediction, our mutual benediction. And after the benediction, for those of you who are here on the ground, I invite you to come and share some more bread. For those in the cloud, I apologize that I have not provided bread for you, but Tricia will be hosting. I'm sure she'll do a good job. I'll read the light print, and I invite you to read the dark print. May God bless us with a restless discomfort about easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that we may deep boldly and love deeply. May God bless us with holy anger at injustice, oppression, and exploitation of people, so that we may work tirelessly for justice, freedom, and peace. May God gift us with the gift of tears to shed with all who suffer from pain, rejection, and starvation, so that we may reach out to bring comfort and transform pain into joy. And may God bless us with enough foolishness to believe that we really can make a difference in this world, so that we are able, with God's grace, to do what others claim cannot be done. Amen.